just like a tree that's standing by the water. The morning after the wobbly meeting, Simon telephoned Joe.
Listen,
he asked,
do you have to fly back to New York today? Can you possibly stay over a night? I got something I'd like you to see. It's time we started reaching people in your generation and really showing you instead of just telling you. Are you game?
And Joe Malik, ex-Trotskyist, ex-engineering student, ex-liberal, ex-Catholic, heard himself saying?
Yes.
And heard a louder voice, unspeaking, uttering a more profound...
Yes.
Deep inside himself, he was game. For astrology, for I Ching, for LSD, for demons, for whatever Simon had to offer as an alternative to the world of sane and rational men, who were sanely and rationally plotting their course toward what could only be the annihilation of the planet. We shall not be moved.
God is dead,
the priest chanted.
God is dead,
the congregation repeated in chorus.
God is dead. We are all absolutely free,
the priest intoned more rhythmically.
God is dead,
the congregation picked up the almost hypnotic beat.
We are all absolutely free.
Joe shifted nervously in his chair. The blasphemy was exhilarating, but also strangely disturbing. He wondered how much fear of hell still lingered in the back corridors of his skull, left over from his Catholic boyhood. They were in an elegant apartment high above Lakeshore Drive.
We always meet here,
Simon had explained,
because of the acrostic significance of the street name.
And the sounds of the automobile traffic far below mingled strangely with the preparations for what Joe already guessed was a black mass.
Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law,
the priest chanted.
Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law,
Joe repeated with the rest of the congregation. The priest, who was the only one who had not removed his clothes before the beginning of the ceremony, was a slightly red-faced middle-aged man in a Roman collar, and part of Joe's discomfort derived from the fact that he looked so much like every Catholic priest he had known in his childhood. It had not helped matters that he had given his name when Simon introduced Joe to him as Padre Pederastia, which he pronounced with a very campy inflection, looking flirtatiously directly in Joe's eyes. The congregation divided, in Joe's mind, into two easily distinguishable groups. Poor full-time hippies from the old town area and rich part-time hippies from Lakeshore Drive itself, and no doubt also from the local advertising agencies on Michigan Avenue. There were only 11 of them, however, including Joe, and Padre Pederastia made 12... Where was the traditional 13th?
Prepare the pentad,
Padre Pederastia commanded. Simon and a rather good-looking young female, both quite unself-conscious in their nakedness, arose and left the group, walking toward the door which Joe had assumed led to the bedroom area. They stopped to take some chalk from a table on which hashish and sandalwood incense were burning in a goat's head taper, then squatted to draw a large pentagon on the blood-red rug. A triangle was then added to each side of the pentagon, forming a star, the special kind of star Joe knew, which was known as pentagram, symbol of werewolves and also of demons. He found himself remembering the corny old poem from the Lon Chaney Jr. movies, but it suddenly didn't sound like kitsch anymore. Even the man who is pure of heart and says his prayers by night can turn to a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
I-O,
the priest chanted raptly.
I-O,
the chorus came.
I-O, E-O, Evo-A,
the chant rose weirdly.
I-er, e-er, Chevrolet.
The rhythmic reply came in cadence. Joe felt a strange, ashy, acrid taste gathering in his mouth, and a coldness creeping into his toes and fingers. The air, too, seemed suddenly greasy and unpleasantly, mucidly moist.
I-O-E-O-Evo-A.
The priest screamed in fear or in ecstasy.
I-O-E-O-Evo-A.
Joe heard himself joining the others. Was it imagination? Or were all their voices subtly changing in a bestial and pongoid fashion?
All sonuf va oresagi,
the priest said more softly.
All sonuf va oresagi,
they chorused.
It is accomplished,
the priest said.
We may pass the guardian.
The congregation arose and moved toward the door. Each person, Joe noticed, was careful to step into the pentagram and pause there a moment, gathering strength before actually approaching the door. When it was his turn, he discovered why. The carving on the door, which had seemed merely obscene and ghoulish from across the room, was more disturbing when you were closer to it. It was not easy to convince yourself that those eyes were just a trick of Trompe de l'oeil. The mind insisted on feeling that they very definitely looked at you, and not affectionately, as you passed. This thing was the guardian, which had to be pacified before they could enter the next room. Joe's fingers and toes were definitely freezing, and auto-suggestion didn't seem a very plausible explanation. He seriously wondered about the possibility of frostbite. But then he stepped into the pentagram, and the cold suddenly decreased. The eyes of the guardian were less menacing, and a feeling of renewed energy flowed through his body, such as he had experienced in a sensitivity training session after he had been cajoled by the leader into unleashing a great deal of pent-up anxiety and rage by kicking, screaming, weeping and cursing. He passed the guardian easily and entered the room where the real action would occur. It was as if he had left the 20th century. The furnishings and the very architecture were Hebraic, Arabic, and medieval European, all mixed together in a most disorienting way, and entirely unrelieved by any trace of the modern or functional. A black-draped altar stood in the centre, and upon it lay the 13th member of the coven. She was a woman with red hair and green eyes, the traits which Satan supposedly relished most in mortal females. There had been a time, Joe remembered, when any woman having those features was automatically suspected of witchcraft. She was, of course, naked, and her body would be the medium through which this strange sacrament would be attempted. What am I doing here? Joe thought frantically. Why don't I leave these lunatics and get back to the world I know? The world where all the horrors are, after all, merely human. But he knew the answer. He could not, literally could not, attempt to pass the guardian until all those present gave their consent. Padre Pederastia was speaking.
This part of the ceremony,
he said, camping outrageously,
is very distasteful to me, as you all know. If only our father below would allow us to substitute a boy on the altar when I'm officiating. But alas, he is, as we all know, very rigid about such things. As usual, therefore, I will ask the newest member to take my place for this rite.
Joe knew from the Malleus Maleficarum and other grimoires what the rite was, and he was both excited and frightened. He approached the altar nervously, noting the others forming a pentagon around the nude woman and himself. She had a lovely body with large breasts and fine nipples, but he was still too nervous to become aroused physically. Padre Pederastia handed him the host.
"I stole this from the church myself,"
he whispered.
"You can be sure it is fully consecrated and completely potent. You know what to do?"
Joe nodded, unable to meet the priest's lascivious eyes. He took the host and spat upon it quickly. The greasiness and electrically charged quality of the air seemed to increase sharply. The light seemed harsher, like the glint of a sword, just as schizophrenics often describe light as a hostile or destructive force. He stepped forward and placed the host upon the thighs of the bride of Satan. Immediately, she moaned softly, as if the simple touch were more erotic than one momentary contact could possibly be. Her legs spread voluptuously, and the middle of the host crumpled as it sunk slightly into her red pubic hair. The effect was at once powerful. Her whole body shuddered, and the host was drawn further into her obviously moist cunt. Using his finger, Joe pushed it the rest of the way in, and she began breathing in a hoarse staccato rhythm. Joe Malik knelt to complete the rite. He felt like a fool and a pervert. He had never performed oral sex or any kind of sex in front of an audience before. He wasn't even turned on erotically. He went ahead just to find out if there was any real magic in this revolting lunacy. As soon as his tongue entered her, she began heaving, and he knew her first orgasm would arrive rapidly. His penis finally began swelling. He began licking the host caressingly. Inside his temple, a drum seemed to be beating hollowly. He hardly noticed it when she came. His senses spun and he licked more, aware only that she flowed more heavily and thickly than any woman he had known. He put his thumb in her anus and his middle finger in her vagina, keeping his tongue in the clitoral area, doing it upright. This was the technique occultists call the Rite of Shiva. Irreverently, he remembered that swingers call it the one-man band. He felt an unusual electrical quality in her pubic hair, and was aware of a heaviness and tension in his penis, more powerful than he'd ever known in his life. But all else was drowned out by the drumming in his head and the cunt taste, cunt smell, cunt warmth. She was Ishtar, Aphrodite Venus. The experience was so intense, he began to feel a real religious dimension to it. Hadn't some 19th century anthropologist argued that cunt worship was the earliest religion? He didn't even know this woman, and yet he had an emotion beyond love. True reverence. Trippy, as Simon would say. How many times she came, he never knew. He came himself without once touching his penis when the host was finally dissolved. He staggered back dizzily, and the air now seemed as resistant to motion as brackish water.
Yogi Safathi Nebladzin,
the priest began chanting.
By Ashtoreth, by Pan Pangenitor, by the yellow sign, by the gifts I have made and the powers I have purchased, by he who is not to be named, by Rabban and by Azathoth, by Samael, by Amon and Ra, vente, vente, Lucifer, lux fiat.
Joe never saw it. He felt it. And it was like chemical mace, blinding and numbing him at once.
Come not in that form,
the priest screamed.
By Jesu, Elohim, and the powers that you fear, I command thee, come not in that form, Yod-Hi-Vah-Hi, come not in that form.
One of the women began weeping in fear.
Quiet, you fool,
Simon shouted at her.
Don't give it more power.
Your tongue is bound until I release it,
the priest said to her. But the distraction of his attention had its cost. Joe felt it growing in potency again, and so did the others, judging from their sudden, involuntary gasps.
Come not in that form,
the priest shouted.
By the cross of gold, and by the rose of ruby, and by Mary's son, I command and demand it of thee. Come not in that form, by thy master Cronzon, by Pangenitor and Panphage. Come not in that form.
There was a hiss, like air pouring into a vacuum, and the atmosphere began to clear, but it also dropped abruptly in temperature.
Master, call no more upon those names. I meant not to harm thee.
The voice was the most shocking experience of the night for Joe. It was oily, flattering, obscenely humble, but there was still within it a secret strength that revealed all too well that the priest's power over it, however obtained, was temporary. That both of them knew it, and that the price of that power was something it longed to collect.
Come not in that form either,
said the priest, more stern and more confident.
Ye know full well that such tones and manners are also intended to frighten, and I like not such jokes. Come in this form which thou habitually wearest in thy current earthly activities, or I shall banish thee back to that realm of which you like not to imagine. I command.
There was nothing campy about the padre now. It was just a room again. An odd, medieval, mid-eastern room, but just a room. The figure that stood among them could not have looked less like a demon.
Okay,
it said in a pleasant American voice.
We don't have to get touchy and hostile with each other over a little theatrics, do we? Just tell me what sort of business transaction you want and drag me here for, and I'm sure we can work out all the details in a down-home, business-like, cards-on-the-table fashion with no hard feelings and mutual satisfaction all around.
It looked like Billy Graham.
The Kennedys, Martin Luther King. You are fantastically naive still, George. It goes back much, much farther.
Hagbard was relaxing with some Alamut Black hash after the Battle of Atlantis.
Look at the pictures of Woodrow Wilson in his last months. The haggard look, the vague eyes, and, in fact, symptoms of a certain slow-acting and undetectable poison. They slipped it to him at Versailles. Or look into the Lincoln caper. Who opposed the Greenback Plan, the closest thing to flax script America ever had? Stanton, the banker. Who ordered all roads out of Washington closed except one? Stanton, the banker. And Booth went straight for that road. Who got a hold of Booth's diary afterward? Stanton, the banker. And turned it over to the archives with 17 pages missing? Stanton, the banker. George, you have so much to learn about real history.
The Reverend William Helmer, religious columnist for Confrontation, stared at the telegram. Joe Malik was supposed to be in Chicago covering the SDS convention. What was he doing in Providence, Rhode Island? And what was he involved in that could provoke such an extraordinary communication? Helmer reread the telegram carefully.
Drop next month's column. We'll pay large bonus for prompt answers to these questions. First, trace all movements of Reverend Billy Graham during last week, and find out if he could possibly have gotten to Chicago surreptitiously. Second, send me a list of reliable books on Satanism and witchcraft in the modern world. Tell nobody else on the magazine about this, Wire me care of Jerry Mallory, Hotel Benefit, Providence, Rhode Island. P.S. Find out where the John Dillinger Died for You Society has its headquarters. Joe Malik.
Those STS kids must have turned him on with acid, Helmer decided. Well, he was still the boss, and he paid nice bonuses when he was pleased. Helmer reached for the phone. Howard the Dolphin was singing a very satirical song about sharks as he swam to meet the Leif Erikson at Paos